This is Larry Yaffa speaking on behalf of the Oral History Committee of SABR. It's Tuesday, September 15, 1992, and I'm visiting at the Middlesex, New Jersey home of Gene Hermansky, National League outfielder whose career spanned 1943 through 1953, most of it spent with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And in 1951, 52, and 53, Gene also saw service with the Chicago Cubs and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Chicago Cubs.
We want to go back to Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Whatever you want.
And that is May 11th, 1920.
Oh, is that on now?
Yes, it sure is.
Okay.
And Gene, you come from an area that produced some darn fine ball players. I mean, Western Massachusetts, the names that come to my mind are Robert Moranville, Leo DeRocher, they came from Springfield.
Yeah, that's right.
And tell us about your family. Describe your family at that time, your dad, mother.
Yeah, well, listen, my parents moved out to Pittsfield because my mother's sister and my father's brother were living out there, and this is many, many years ago. Of course, if I was born 1920, that'd be many years ago.
Yeah.
And Pop, he had a kind of a grocery store, a mom and pop store for a while. But I was, and then he sold it when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And my mother's brother had a business in Newark, and he said to my dad, "Why don't you come down here?" And he says, "Things are a lot better in Jersey than it is in Pittsfield, Mass." Because it was a small country town at that time. So they migrated down there. So I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
So basically, I spent most of my time in Jersey.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother.
One brother. And
he's about 1 year old then. I was like five.
So actually, your teenage years and your grown-up years are right in this area.
That's right. In fact, it's right in Newark.
Right. And how did your parents feel as you were growing up as far as baseball was concerned? Did you always know you were going to be a ball player? Or?
No, I never knew that, really.
Yeah.
And my parents, listen to this.
Yeah.
They saw me playing out in the street.
Yeah.
I'd take my glove, go to a sandlot.
Sure.
But that's all they knew about me and
yeah.
what I did. And then in those days, it wasn't Little League. It was, you would pick up your team, your neighborhood kids, and get a ball and throw it and catch and hit the ball, you know.
And there was no organized Little League.
No, nothing at all. Let me tell you another thing, too. This is during the Depression now.
Yeah.
Back in early 30s, I was 12, 13, 14 years old.
Right.
We had depression going.
I know about that.
And either you became active in sports or a goddamn hoodlum, you know?
Yeah.
It was one or the other.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed sports. So we played all the time.
Right. Let me ask you this. Did you go to high school in Newark?
I went to Eastside High School in Newark.
Eastside
High. Yeah.
And did you have... I'm trying to think of your first awakenings as far as baseball was concerned. When did you really get into it seriously, to the point of where you thought you wanted to become a professional ball player?
Well, geez, we're going way back now, but I played in high school,
yeah.
And then we had teams that we made up among ourselves. We played neighborhood team. So in the spring of the year, every year, when I was sophomore, junior, and a senior, I played ball at the high school team. We didn't play too many games, maybe 20, 25 games or less,
yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah.
But we kind of organized ourselves. We challenged different teams in the neighborhood,
yeah.
Maybe of this an area of 4 or 5 miles.
Yeah. We used to do that in Brooklyn, too, you know, up at the parade ground.
It's the same principle involved in those days, you know? And then there used to be a semi-pro team called the Ironbound League, where the big guys played, you know, the good ball player. They were 18, 19, 20. Some guys were 25 years old. And I was 15, 16. I was a pretty good big kid by then.
Yeah.
I was playing pretty good baseball with my crowd, you know.
Yeah.
So one of the fellows invited me to play with the big guys in the Ironbound in the Twilight League. You played 7 innings?
Yeah.
And I played like hell with them. I played real good, see.
Did you have a somebody who was important to you as a coach or a manager
Later on, but in the beginning.
No, I mean when you were a kid. I mean, kind of directing you or teaching you the ABC.
One chap, he's like 4 years older than me, or perhaps three, Charlie Fields. He was a frustrated baseball player, but because he never thought about playing professionally.
Yeah.
But he loved baseball. He's a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
And he liked my attitude. He felt that was coachable. And said, you just keep playing. And, and if you like it, maybe you're in the professionals. He was not aware of minor league pro ball, but, that maybe someday something may happen. Just put it that way.
Did you have any teachers in school, in high school, for example, that had an influence on you? Sometimes kids have a teacher that supports them.
A fellow named Mike Winders.
Yeah.
He was another guy that loved to play ball, but he was a teacher. He worked in the wood shop or something. What would you call that?
The carpentry?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Cabinet maker?
They taught that in school. And he liked me. He liked the way I moved and threw the ball. And he gave me some tips about batting and, maybe running and maybe rounding first base, things like that.
Obviously as you were growing up, you probably had some things that influenced you, made you think in terms of playing minor league ball or major league ball, didn't you? I mean,
not until I was approached in this Iron Bowl League, telling you. I was like 17 years old.
Yeah.
And Jack Farb, he was a kind of a bird dog for the Dodger organization. And he says, would you like to have a tryout with the Dodgers? I said, what? You trying? Geez, yeah. So he got a hold of Andy High, I believe.
He was a coach then.
He's scouting too.
Yeah, yeah.
But Jack Farb was just kind of a bird dog.
Yeah.
He knew Andy, so if he had a lead on a ball player, he'd call him up.
Yeah.
So he saw me play, and I tried on Nevis Field, looked pretty good. He says, how's that to go to spring training with Durham, North Carolina, Class B. He's Class B to me. Didn't mean anything, Class B.
Sure.
Class D, didn't mean anything. He's, yeah. He's, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, you pay your fare down there, see, Wilson, North Carolina somewhere. I've forgotten where. Maybe it was Durham. He says, and if you play well, you make team, we'll refund you the money. You imagine that? I had to pay my way down. And it was a hell of a challenge to me.
Yeah.
And I explained to my parents, who had were unaware of what I was doing, where I was going. But they sensed my desire.
Yeah.
I was like a little kid,
tugging
on my mother's apron, saying, you got to let me go,
It was just the first trip away from home?
Yeah. So I went down there, and of course I played pretty good. In fact, Branch Rickey Jr., known as the Twig, said, geez, you throw the ball pretty good. He's like, I remember this as long as I live. You got a better arm than Joe Medwick. I said, what? Well, anyway, I look good, and we have a roof here in our organization, and what we'll do is send you to Olean, New York.
There was a question that Norman Mack, who's the head of the Oral History Committee, asked me, and he said that he was interested in how you got to Brooklyn so rapidly from Durham. In other words, you got a sudden summons of some kind to get to the Dodgers from Durham, which was a big jump.
Well, no, wait a minute. I didn't play with Durham. I ended up playing in Olean, New York.
Oh, I see.
See?
Uh-huh.
This is an interesting story.
Please, that's what we want to hear.
Why
don't you lean back there? We'll put this over here.
That's right.
More comfortable.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Let me refresh this in my mind. But in 1941, they sent me to Olean, New York, and Jake Pittler was my manager.
I remember Jake.
And then a war broke out.
Yeah.
In December of 1941, right?
Right.
Boom! I went into service right away.
Yeah.
The Army was after me.
Yeah.
Well, a buddy of mine in my neighborhood was in the Coast Guard. He says, Gene, you can't beat this. He says, you always eat good food,
Yeah.
And you board ship, and it's always clean. I said, okay.
So within 24 hours, I joined a Coast Guard. So now I'm in a Coast Guard. I'm stationed in Ellis Island. And of course, they got a baseball team there. And I volunteered, told them who I was. Didn't register anybody. But I said, well, let me try out for the team. Well, lo and behold, you know, I played pretty good. You have to play 1 year of minor league ball, you know. And Rabbit Jacobson was the manager there, and he's from Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he managed our team. He's always involved in sports.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. 1 year of minor league ball was at Olean, though, right?
Oh, yeah,
not Durham. Okay.
No.
Now, go ahead. With Rabbit Jacobson.
That was my first year at Olean, New York. So now I'm in a service. And I, service. Oh, on the bulletin board, they said, looking for volunteers or men to qualify and join the United States Naval Air Corps. And I said to myself,
that was quite a program.
I said, I'm going to sign up for everything because I don't want to go overseas.
Yeah.
You know, so I signed up for it.
Yeah.
I took a simple examination. I passed it.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you qualify to join the U.S. Navy Air Corps. However, we have to make you a civilian first, legally, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, that's fine. They said, but there's one catch to it. What? So you'd probably be a civilian for about close to 2 months, maybe 3 months. There's a long waiting list. I said, that's fine.
Yeah.
Fine with me. You know where I live?
Yeah.
What? So the moment they released me from the Coast Guard, I ran over to Brooklyn. And this happened to be maybe May or April or June. I've forgotten. It was in the spring of the year. And I remember Sir Birch Rickey Jr. and I explained to my situation. Boys, we can use ball players. We need a guy down in Durham, North Carolina right now. You want to go? I said, sure. He says, you want to get paid? I said, I don't care. You know. He says, what would you want? I said, I don't know.
He
said, we'll give you $300 a month. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to get out. I was so happy. I was eager.
Yeah.
And he said, if he said $50 a month, I would have gone down. You know, $300 a month.
Yeah.
So I go down there, and Bruno Betzel's the manager.
Yeah, I remember him. He managed at Jersey City for a while.
Buzzy Bavasi was the general manager,
right?
He took care of, he's the road secretary, everything. And I'm down there for about almost 2 weeks. I'm hitting the hell out of the ball. I'm hitting almost a 500. Three home runs and won several games because of my hitting, you know? So Buzzy, I learned this later on, calls Ricky up and says, we got a phenom down here. He's in wartime. It's wartime. He says, as we all know, why don't you bring him up? So, I lost a year there because this happened in 43. So, in 43 is when they made the transfer for him. Did I say 42?
Yeah.
That doesn't matter at the moment, but.
Yeah.
This happened all in 1943.
Yeah, it must have been 43.
Yeah,
because that was your first time you went
to. Yeah, that's right. So
they
brought me up to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And Leo DeRocher was the manager. And I walk in a clubhouse and I'm in awe. I've been reading about these guys.
Yeah.
Now, what am I, 22 years old, 21, I forgot. But I'm in awe and I walk into Leo, I go, Mr. DeRocher, nervously. He said, hey, kid, don't be, shook my hand. He sensed that, sweating it out.
Sure. I imagine he's been up against that type of situation many times with young ball players.
I'm sure, And they call me, Leo, don't worry about it. And John Griffith, give me a uniform, all that stuff. So I was there quite early, went out and worked out with the team.
Yeah.
And Leo calls me up, he says, I want you to sit on the bench with me for a day or two, just get the feel of this thing, you know. He knew my background, Class D, Class B, now the major leagues, And I was a nervous little punk, So I would sit alongside him. I would ask questions about a certain ball player, why is he playing? And Leo was really impressed. He said, this guy's got something on the ball, And I did it instinctively, Why would the guy play to the left of the... he's a pull hitter. I didn't know that. And then... The third day, put me in a boys, a doubleheader on a Sunday, and in Ebbets Field. And the third day I was there. And I played the first game, and I went 0-4.
This is 1943.
43, yeah. I went 0-4, and we lost the game. You know, I should lose. I didn't get too nervous. But look at the lineup. I'm in the second game. Now, Bucky Walters is pitching. The reason why I know that, because I got a couple of hits.
Second game,
yeah. Double there. I got a couple of hits,
yeah.
2-4. And we win a game. So they're on. You have to get those two hits. I had the confidence going.
Let me just interrupt you a second. Who pitched the first game? Because that was obviously the first pitcher you faced.
I don't remember.
Is that right?
No.
Walters, you could remember. He was a very, you know, prominent pitcher.
Yeah, but I got the hits off. That's why I remembered.
Yeah.
You know. And then I never retrieved the ball either. Why not? Usually they throw the ball back.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
In those days, shucks. Yeah. They wouldn't do that. So I continued on. I guess I ended up playing almost 3 weeks with the Dodgers, and I get the call in from the Navy.
Yeah.
And I went up to Colgate for my basic training.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm in a naval uniform and going to school. They had a huge phys ed program, whip you in shape.
Did you need a couple of years of college to qualify there for the naval training program?
I mean, it would have helped. I didn't have college.
Yeah.
But since I took the written exam in the beginning, I qualified.
Right.
So now there's overflow of these candidates like myself. They call it the V5 program.
Yeah.
So what they did, they took the top three quarters scholars and did pretty good.
Right.
You know, I was the best of all students because I didn't have the college. And I was the lower quarter.
Yeah.
So they eliminated us.
Yeah.
They just cut us out of the program.
Yeah.
They had just too many
time.
So now they call me in, the Navy calls me and says, how would you like to be a gunner for the Navy? You know, you can still be in an airplane.
Yeah.
And you're doing me a favor. Whatever you can do, get me back in the Coast Guard. I love that duty. And fortunately, I hit the right kid.
Yeah.
He's an ensign,
yeah.
Young kid. He knows my eagerness that I really wanted to go back to the Coast Guard. Yeah, see what I can do for you. So within a day or two, he says, there's an opening in Biloxi, Mississippi, and one in Floyd Benefield in Brooklyn. I said, I'll take the Floyd Benefield in Brooklyn. What a break. Wow.
So somebody was looking out for you up there.
Oh. I was stationed in Brooklyn. My parents were in Newark, you know?
Yeah, sure. Incidentally, how did they react with your having to go away from home for the first time, going down to Durham or Olean? Did that bother them at all? Or
I had to call frequently and write letters and things like that. But they
encouraged you. They didn't discourage you.
They were the type of people say, well, they don't notice my eagerness to, I'm kind of a stubborn kind of a person.
Yeah.
If I wanted something, I'd go and do it.
Yeah, the drive.
Yeah, that's right, the drive.
Yeah.
They sensed that, so they left me alone.
That's great.
And my parents didn't know anything about baseball until I played with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1943.
Yeah.
And
did they see that first couple of games that you
played? No, they never did. You know, they didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
They just... Not aware of it.
Yeah.
So eventually I explained to them, and our neighbors got together because they knew more about my parents.
Yeah.
You know, your boy's a great ball player. What's a ball player? Yeah. So finally they both went over one of the games.
Yeah.
And they see the big crowds out there. They were amazed, I swear.
Well, that's great. Then it probably became...
When I got back at 46, 7, and 8, my dad worked. My mother would come over.
Yeah.
She'd take the train over because
I had
my car. I'd drive over.
Yeah.
She'd come over two or three times a week. They call her Mrs. Hermansky. She's like a queen bee. Oh, Mrs. Hermansky. She loved it. She wanted to go back every day.
All right, now take us back to the Coast Guard. Now, you're back in the Coast Guard, okay? After this ensign and the Navy.
Yeah, that's right. I'm at the
flight program got you back in
the Coast Guard, but we're Floyd Benefield Naval Base, right? We have a small nook, little corner, edge of the entire huge field of the Coast Guard. Now, the Navy gets wind of the fact that I play professional baseball. They approached my commanding officer and said, can he play with our Navy team? He said, sure.
Yeah.
And the Coast Guard had a baseball team.
Uh-huh.
So I played with the Navy and the Coast Guard. Now, listen to this. Remember Bushwicks?
Oh, yes, out in Dexter Park.
Dexter Park.
Yeah.
They got wind of the fact I was in the area.
Yeah.
They invited me out to play Saturdays, Friday nights and Saturday and Sunday. Friday nights.
On the weekends.
And yeah. Sunday.
Yeah.
So I was getting $50 a game Friday at the Bushwicks. I played two games on a Sunday. I got $100. I was making $150 a week in 1944, 45. And people were making money, what? They were making $30, $40 a week in those days.
Yes, of course.
$50 a week.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
I was on top of the world. I had a locker full of $20 bills.
But you also were, if you went to play with the Bushwicks, you must have played against some of those great black teams.
Black teams. Oh, let me finish. Getting back to the Bushwicks.
Yeah. Who was that, Joe Press then?
Yeah, Joe Press was the manager. Yeah. And Max, I forgot his last name, was the owner.
Max Rosner.
Rosner.
And you had other guys like Eppie Barnes playing.
Eppie Barnes and LaRocca.
Jack LaRocca, yeah, it was a great high school.
No, not LaRocca.
No,
LaRocca. Box Nicola.
Frank Nicola, yeah, from Holy Cross.
But no, Bots Nicola was a pitcher for the Yankees, I think.
Yes, he was. He was originally at Holy Cross.
Now with the Bushwicks, but before I start playing with him, I say, hey, wait a minute. We all got together, had a meeting.
Yeah.
And Joe Press is what? I said, I'm not going to use my last name, you know, with you guys.
Yeah.
If they are fine out, and I'm playing
Friday
nights,
yeah.
semi-pro ball, perhaps getting paper. They kicked me right in the butt and sent me overseas.
Yeah.
And Joe, what do you want to do? So there's a fellow, I'll never forget him, Jack O'Neill, a first baseman. He and I become friendly immediately. He's, why don't we call him Walsh? His name was O'Neill.
Yeah.
We call him Gene Walsh. I said, that's great, Jackie. All right. So from that moment on, my name was Gene Walsh.
Oh, wonderful.
That's one of the smartest things I ever did in my lifetime.
So you played with them for, one season or...?
Two, 44, 45.
Uh-huh.
And then I was discharged honorably from the Coast Guard, and I joined the Dodgers in 43.
That was in... when did you first get to meet Rex Barney? Apparently he wasn't at Durham with you when you were down there, from the way you're talking.
I think he was with me in... a short period of time in 1943.
Yeah.
He and Howie Schultz.
Was this at Durham now or?
No, with the Dodgers.
With the Dodgers. Yeah, at the time that
I was there,
you were up at Ebbets Field.
Yeah, they brought those kids up. I think Louie Omo. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
That reminds me. That's Hermansky, of course. Louie Omo.
Sure.
Rex Barney. Hal Gregg.
Yeah.
And Howie Schultz.
This is a great picture.
That's Southern.
Yeah. They may want to borrow this if you have no objections. I'm not going to take it with me now.
Well,
they may want to borrow this.
You can take it with you now.
I can?
Sure.
Because, okay. We'll return it. And but this is a picture that Norman Mack of Sabre is doing a book on Rex Barney.
Oh,
and
is that
he
right?
Wanted to know if you had any pictures of yourself and Barney together. So this is perfect. Okay, that's great.
The poor soldiers died. Hal Gregg.
He just died?
Yeah.
When was this, recently? Or?
About 2 months ago.
Oh, I don't... You know,
Dick Lombardi told me.
Oh, that's a shame. I remember him, big guy, big fastball.
Yeah, we played ball together.
Oh, I have some notes here of when you were, first playing ball, did you always play the outfield or did you play other positions as
no,
well?
No, always the outfield.
Always the outfield. And... you told me about your memories of your first day with the Dodgers there, that playing in a doubleheader. I think that's terrific. Some of the people that you played with now, I have a list of all of these guys, very familiar to you. Was Dolph Camilli still with the team when you were there?
No, I don't know what happened to Dolph. No, he wasn't.
He was not.
He was there in 41, right in the championship series.
I thought perhaps by the time you went back there in 46, I wondered whether he was still playing.
Oh, no, I think he retired by then.
And did you... I have Archie Vaughn.
Yep, I remember Archie.
And
Augie Warren gave me several good tips on hitting.
Yeah, that's he was one of the great ones and a terrific athlete. Frenchie Bordigeret.
Yes, he was there.
Do you have any particular memories of the guys you played with in those years when you first came up in 46?
Well, you mentioned Frenchie Bordigeret.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see this, but they tell me it's a true story.
Yeah.
He's playing the outfield one day with Evans Field or somewhere else. Yeah. And a towering fly ball comes up, and he has to run in and catch it, right? As he's running in, his hat flips off.
Yeah.
So he looks around, gets his hat, puts it on, and looks for the ball. Of course, the ball already dropped.
Well, there are a lot of stories about him.
He's a real character, I tell you.
You know, they tell another story about him, about how he was on second base, and he took his foot off the base, and he was tagged out. And Casey Stengel was, you know, quite on him, was on him because of that. And Bordigeret said, I was just tapping my foot. He said, and they got me in between taps. How about...
he didn't protest, huh?
How about some of these other guys? Dixie Walker?
I played with him. He's there for
any interesting anecdotes about any of these guys, you know, that you remember? Yeah. Augie Gallan.
Augie Gallan was there. He didn't qualify for the serve because of a bad knee, I believe.
He was a fine athlete. Great.
Yes.
Player. Was Paul Wehner with the team there? Tell me about him. He's a colorful character.
I don't even remember much.
He was probably very near the end of his career.
Yeah, probably the last year, yes.
Bobby Bray.
You're going back now, 43. That's almost 50 years
ago.
Well,
I want to tap you a little bit here.
I'm going to reach back. Bobby Bray, I remember, of course.
And Al Glossop, Howie Schultz, you mentioned.
Schultz, I remember him. Glossop?
He was with the Dodgers very briefly during the war years. Eddie Stevens must have been with the team.
Yeah, first base, right?
And of course, Pee Wee Reese, Lavagetto, Carl Furillo.
Furillo and I played minor league ball together.
Was this at Olean?
Olean, yeah.
Because you didn't have much of a minor league career. You were up at the Dodgers most of the time.
Yeah. Well, my big break was the World War II. Now, let's face it. We have no war, there's no Hermansky, there's no you here today.
No, I know. That's absolutely right. Was Pete Reeser with the team when you were there?
In 46, 78.
Yes.
Pete and I became very, very friendly. We were good friends.
Yeah. Pete was some kind of ball player.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you a story about him.
Please do. That's why I'm asking you about all these names.
Well, Pete and I were good friends, but we're playing this one night game in Ebbets Field.
Yeah.
He's playing center field, I'm playing left field.
Right.
Someone hits a hell of a shot towards in center field, a little left, but I broke for it. I knew I couldn't get it.
Yeah.
If anybody can get it, Pete could.
Yeah.
And Pete running like hell. He boom, 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 boom. Yeah. And he jumps up, and the ball hits his glove, but his head hits the
concrete,
and he drops.
Yeah.
You know? Now, wait, look. Let me finish the story. Now the ball trickled down along the wall almost, like water.
Yeah.
And it lands between the wall and Pete. And Pete's cradled, so no one can see the ball.
Yeah.
See? This is the God's honest truth. So I'm in there within seconds.
Yeah.
I see the ball, you know.
Yeah.
I get the ball put in his glove.
Yeah.
Right? In the meantime, I know he's hurt because he's out cold.
Yeah.
He smashed his head against that damn wall. But within 3-4 seconds, the umpire's out there. He looks. Calls the batter out. And the batter went crazy. I forgot who it was. It was against Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, that was the last time he ran on the wall. And if he didn't do things like that, he would have been one of the greatest ball players.
I was going to say, there were people, including Charlie Dressen when he was alive, who said...
And also Leo DeRocher.
Yeah.
Loved them.
They say that this guy was the Mickey Mantle of his day.
Right. Willie Mays, too.
He had all of the same type of talent. The speed, and certainly the batting eye.
Didn't he steal the home plate seven times?
Yeah, he was a remarkable athlete. And as a matter of fact, the story was that Branch Rickey tried to protect him from the minor league draft by having him work as a chauffeur one summer in St. Louis.
I never knew that.
Yeah. And that's what
eventually, Reeser became a free agent because of that. That's how the Dodgers got him, according to the stories we've been told.
What a nice person, too.
Bruce Edwards?
He's my roommate. Poor soul died at a young age.
Yes, he did. What was wrong with him? What happened?
He died of a heart attack.
I remember him as a catcher. He's a good catcher.
We were roommates, and I never saw them. After I left baseball, we never made contact. That's too bad.
Dick Whitman?
Yeah, he would play left field, outfield with me.
Yeah, Dick was an Oregon boy.
Yeah, he's still out there.
Captain of the University of Oregon baseball team when he was coming up. Farrell Anderson?
We used to call him Crooked Neck.
Who, Whitman? Anderson, yeah, because he had his...
neck was like one position. Yeah. He couldn't twist it too much.
He was very sensitive about that, too.
Yeah, he's one of the boys.
Yeah.
If you call him Crooked Neck, he knew you liked him.
Yeah.
That's how it was, you know.
I think I can remember a tremendous rhubarb they had with Pee Wee Reese and Phil Cavaretta and Dixie Walker and Lenny Marullo.
Oh, in Ebbets Field?
Yes. I don't know whether you were with the team.
Yeah, I was there.
Time.
Yeah. I was shaking the fly balls in the outfield.
It was before they had the, before a game, actually.
Yeah,
so
there
was nobody there, and then the police.
It was Walker and Marullo got at it.
Yeah.
And we formed a huge circle.
Yeah.
And these guys were whacking each other. And then
Recent Cavaretta, too, I understand. They were going at it. And that surprised me because they were two of the least likely guys to get into a fight.
Perhaps. But I remember Dixie Walker and Marullo getting into it. And we formed a huge circle. I guess they were at it for less than a minute because both players are lousy fighters anyway.
Well, the reason I'm mentioning it is because Farrell Anderson supposedly stopped the fight.
He's a big, burly guy.
He
you're
got
right.
in there and he pulled him apart.
He looked like a wrestler. Guy,
yeah. And a very mild-mannered guy. I met him.
Did you?
Yeah. I met him, actually, I was coming back from Philadelphia where the Dodgers were playing a doubleheader, and I gave him a ride home to Brooklyn, and from the Penn Station. Johnny Jorgensen.
Oh, Spider.
Spider Jorgensen, yeah.
Oh, sure.
He was a teammate of yours.
Yeah.
You know, like as I go through these names, if you think of any particular episodes, one of the guys I liked on the 48 team was Marvin Rackley, a very nice guy from South Carolina down there.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about him. He would play occasionally, but the days he didn't play, they would ask him to pitch batting practice, which he didn't mind, and he did. He did it quite frequently. And then he went up to the management and says, I don't mind pitching batting practice, but I expect you guys to buy me a pair of shoes. I'm wearing my damn shoes out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. He didn't have the plate on.
Yeah, he didn't have the plate.
Well, Marvin and I ran
in those days, we had to buy our own shoes, you know, our own gloves.
Oh, yeah, it's a little different.
And our own sweatshirts.
But Marvin is, he was interested in becoming a minister.
That's right.
And I ran into him in Atlanta. He was, and I think he's still doing it, unless he's retired. He was selling Oldsmobiles and living in Decatur, Georgia.
Georgia.
Which is near Atlanta. He had a married daughter down there. A really nice guy. Billy Cox. That was he was on the 1948 team.
49 too.
Cox was some kind of a fielder, wasn't he?
Listen, let me tell you something. I play left field with Billy Cox on third, Pee Wee Reese on short. Yeah. I never got a ground ball. I'm telling you, like a vacuum cleaner.
Campy was with your team in 48. And I remember he broke in with a bang, hit a couple of home runs on a Sunday, and beat the Giants. And
I can't remember an individual that team, but Campy, he was just a lovable kind of a guy, bubbling personality and loved everybody and said the right things and all that stuff. One of his favorite phrases is, hey, you guys, playing baseball is a kid's game. And I enjoy every minute of it, and we get paid for it. We get paid for this stuff. This is terrific. You can't beat it.
He used to take issue with Jackie Robinson sometimes, so Jack would, get a little bit loud with the umpires and things. He said, Jack, He said, I'm with you all the time. He said, but when you're wrong, sometimes you're loud wrong.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that was...
I never heard that expression. That's good.
He says, when you're wrong, he says, you're loud wrong. And, of course, Jackie had to put up with a lot when he first came up.
I admire Jackie Robinson, the guff he had to take. You don't mind one or two days where, you know, they call Black Jackie, Shoeshine Boy, and sticking his ear.
Yeah.
You know,
some of it got real mean.
They call them cuss words, you know, F and this and F and that.
Oh, sure, that was it.
And then, but this one, especially on the road, day in and day out. And look at this. We're traveling. He couldn't stay at the hotels with us. You know that.
Right. Yeah.
What they would do, they prearrange some professional person, like a lawyer or a doctor, who was a Negro, and make arrangements for him to stay there and provide transportation. And, of course, they'd pay these people a fee for having to take care of Robinson.
Well, yeah,
he had to do that in Cincinnati, St. Louis, I think Chicago in the beginning. You know, I mean, all is Western, except Boston, I believe.
Well, you know, Jackie was one of the first Black ball players to stay at the Chase in St. Louis.
Is that right?
And, yes, and...
I know, in the beginning he couldn't.
No, he couldn't, but he thought that was important that he stay there when they finally... Somebody on the, you know, the Dodgers put pressure on the hotel too, and so he agreed to stay there. They told him he'd have to have his meals in his
room.
In his room, and Campy was upset with Jackie at that time because he and the other Black ball players on the Dodgers were staying at
Bankhead.
Yeah,
Bankhead. You know, Bankhead was the second Black in baseball,
and they were staying at another hotel. And Campy said, "No," he said. He says, I don't know why you don't stay, you know, down here with us. He says, you're just making it hard on yourself, you know. But Jackie had the cause, and he had the guts to do it.
That's right. Very courageous fella.
I ran into George Shuba at
Shotgun.
Shotgun Shuba when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame there in Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn, yeah.
And George is there along with Clem Levine. Levine was inducted at the same time.
Shuba's a character. I remember him telling me, he says, if you and I had a fight for a left field job and all our abilities were exactly the same, he said, I would beat you in one category. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I would beat you in one category. I said, what is that? He said, I could run into the wind. I could run to second base against the wind better than you can.
That's a great line. How about Eddie Mixes?
Oh yeah, Eddie. Great,
he's from
player.
He's from Burlington, New Jersey originally.
Yeah, he spent a lot of years there. He's living outside of Philly now.
Oh, is that right? Do you see a lot of these guys?
Only at the card shows.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe some reunion.
Of course, Mickey Owen is still very much alive.
Getting back to Mixes.
Yeah.
That kid was a hell of a fielder. I'll tell you, he was great.
Right.
He played any place in the infield. First, second, third, you know, short. He's fast. His only weakness was a stick, but...
After a while, he got hit a little bit.
He ended up being in the big leagues about 16 years, I think, you know, all the clubs.
I didn't know it was that long.
Chicago, Cincinnati, Brooklyn.
But was Bobby Morgan with the team when you were there? He was an infielder...
Yeah, he came up.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a story about Bobby Moore. Did you hear this story?
No, but I know you saved his life.
In spring training. In Vero Beach.
No, tell us about that.
The other tow, three of us were out. Mixes, Bobby Moore and myself.
Yeah.
Just the three of us. And Vero Beach, was at that time, was just a barren wasteland.
Yeah.
You know? And we went out, and before you know it, just Bobby and I.
Yeah.
And the undertow was taking us out. And I got a little panicky myself.
Yeah.
But I was a pretty good swimmer. And I sensed later on that Bobby was not that good as a swimmer, and he panicked more than I did.
Yeah.
We're out there maybe 100 feet. We couldn't touch them. So he says, I'm drowning, Gene. I said, so I go out there. I get around him. I start pushing him toward the shore.
Yeah. You know?
This went on for about 10 minutes. And I was exhausted. But before the shore was one of those poles they had for some reason.
Yeah.
It was like 5 feet of water.
Yeah.
Deep, but full of barnacles.
Yeah.
I just
slippery, yeah.
I said, grab that pole, you know?
Yeah.
And he did, and I did. And we were there like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We hugged this damn pole, and what do you think? The barnacles just cut us up. We were like bleeding.
Yeah.
So once we rest a little bit,
yeah,
we want another 10, 15 feet,
yeah,
and where we can touch.
Yeah.
And it was a scary situation. You read this in a paper, right?
I remember reading it at the time.
Yeah. Now, wait a minute. So now we're in camp, spring training camp. I see Branch Rickey Jr. I says, you know, I did a hell of a thing for you and the organization. He says, yeah, well, I appreciate that very much. He was very kind of you. He says, you were a brave person to do a thing like that. I says, look, I've been reading in the paper where Bobby Morgan's worth $50,000. In those days, a lot of money, right? Yeah. I said, you should give me at least $10,000-$15,000 for crying out. I was serious.
I'm sure he was serious, too.
He just, no, he just, swimming is out of bounds and that's it. Isn't that something?
Oh, my gosh. That's really something. How about just looking at some of these other names? How about Pee-wee? Did you get, I'm sure everybody was Pee-wee's
friend. He's lovable. Pee-wee's lovable. Everybody, you're right. Everybody's friend.
And I remember he said he never wanted to be a manager. It wasn't his, you know, he felt...
It wasn't his makeup.
It wasn't his makeup.
You know? Yeah. He knew the things Leo DeRoche had to do. He knew the things that Leo DeRoche had to say. Get angry as ball players. That's part of the game, managing, you know?
Were you there when Buck Newsom was on the team?
In 43.
Yeah.
Newsom, being Bubbo.
Bubbo, yeah.
Yeah, he was there at 43.
No, I wondered whether that wasn't the year that he had that run-in with DeRoche, was it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Tim Cohane, did you remember that incident?
No, but I read it in the paper. It happened while I was with the team. I didn't sense anything, and no one told me anything. Yeah. I was just a little rookie, you know. So no one would confide in me or say, tell me things
I understand. How about your managers that you had when you were starting to play ball? Who was your manager? Now, you mentioned your manager in Olean was Jake Pittler.
Pittler, yeah. Then Bruno Betzel.
And Bruno Betzel. Do you have any interesting comments about them? I mean, how you reacted to them? What was your opinion of them as managers?
Jake Pittler was a lovable kind of a guy.
He's a knowledgeable baseball man.
Yeah, he was. And he growled and yelled,
yeah,
but he really didn't mean it. You could sense that.
Yeah.
And I used to protest a lot of his comments or things he'd say.
Yeah.
He ended up calling me a Polak Bolshevik. Because you're a Bolshevik the way you talk to me, you know? I said, Jake, you're wrong. Things like that. And one day, we're playing all night games in Olean, New York. So I used to love the sun and swim, and I got too much sun, and we played that game that night, and we lost, and I didn't dare take my sweatshirt off, took my uniform off, because I was blistering red. So I decided I'm going to go home, put my sweatshirt on, my pants, and take a shower at home, you know, the place I was rooming.
Sure.
As I was leaving, Jake says, hey, where the hell are you going, Armansky? He says, I'm going to go home. He said, how come you don't take a shower? I said, I don't want to take a shower. He said, take that shirt off and take a shower. He said, I know you've been out in the sun all day. And I took it off, took a shower. I was like shining red.
Now, you played for DeRoche and you also played for Bert Schotten. Do you have any comments there?
Well, Bert Schotten helped me a great deal because he was a fatherly type, kind of an understanding. You make errors, they don't say anything to you about that, because that's a normal thing.
Well, that's part of the game.
Yeah, that's a normal
thing. I think they get upset about mental lapses.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Yeah. You know, you don't butt the guy over.
Yeah.
You miss a sign.
Yeah.
Throw the wrong base. You know, the basic things.
Yeah.
But Leo DeRoche is going nuts. You couldn't get a guy over to, you know, butt. Yeah. Butt him over, you know. If the opposition or your opponents would make a great play on a butt play, that'd be different. But you know, pop it up. Or
hit
two foul balls, you're going to swing again, you know. He couldn't tolerate that. And he's right.
And
you should be able to put the ball down 90% of the time.
Some of the ball players that played for Schotten, as you say, he was a fatherly type, but some of them, would comment that perhaps he was a little bit too old to manage the team at the time he managed the team. Did you get that feeling?
I've heard those comments.
Yeah. I just wondered whether, that was a general opinion. But he was certainly a very close friend of Ricky's. They had played together, were teammates at the turn of the century. Charlie Dressen, how about him as a manager?
Next to DeRosier, I thought he's one of the best.
Very knowledgeable guy. Charlie had some great comments, you know. He'd say, keep us close, I'll think of something. You
remember? Yeah, you're right, you're right.
And Charlie also had that
He used to make the comment, too, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I know my baseball.
The interesting thing about Charlie was when Willie Mays made a spectacular catch to save a ball game at the Polo Grounds against the Dodgers. He said, I'd like to see him do it again. he had some great one-liners. And you also played for Phil Cavaretta and Frankie Frisch and Billy Meyer.
Yeah.
How do you
say? Not Billy Meyer. I didn't play for him.
Wasn't he managing Pittsburgh?
No, it was Fred Haney, I think.
Fred Haney? But anyway, how about Frisch and Cavaretta? Did you play for Frankie at
Chicago? Yeah, Frankie Frisch the first year.
That must have been an experience.
Oh, yeah. He says,
I got to shake you up a little on that, because Frisch is always a good source for stories.
Yeah, I can remember one game that we're playing. We're winning the game at about the fourth, fifth inning. It was 7-2. Then it became 7-4. As the game progressed, it was 7-6. And about the eighth inning, the opposition, for who it was, we tied us. And I can remember first in the duck, I just, I got to throw up. I can't stand this goddamn game. You guys are so, I'm going up to the clubhouse, listen to it on radio. He left.